KALW.
This is TBH. I'm your host, Miriam Reichenberg, and I'm a junior at Berkeley High School. This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds. Today's episode is about climate change fatigue and the steps young people can take to actually feel like they're making a difference. You'd have to be living in a bunker to avoid the constant barrage of news stories telling us that our planet is doomed. And honestly, other than Greta Thunberg, I think few young people feel like they have the power or know-how to make a lasting impact on the policies, let alone day-to-day changes, that'll help fight climate change. My fellow TBH intern, Meher Indolia, has often felt this sense of fatigue when it comes to knowing what steps to take to combat climate change. And so she began exploring how she and other Gen Zers can become more hopeful while enacting real change. Meher is a recent graduate of Newark Memorial High School and now a freshman at UC Santa Barbara. This is her story.
Earlier this year, news of the green light for the Willow Project exploded on my social media feed.
Stop Willow. The Willow Oil Project is an $8 billion proposed oil and gas project in Alaska.
The drilling project could produce up to 180,000 barrels of oil a day. That would amount to 1.5% of overall U.S. oil production, PBS says. Federal and state officials say that the project would provide Alaskans with jobs, but it would release more than 9 million metric tons of carbon pollution annually. That's the equivalent of adding 2 million conventional cars to the roads every year, the National Resources Defense Council says. In my mind, that's the environmental equivalent of throwing on a down comforter when you're about to die from heat stroke. To be clear, the Willow Project's projected emissions are just a drop in the industrial-sized bucket of our emissions. But the news still made me feel powerless to prevent this drop from entering the bucket, because the news reports say that we're not curbing emissions enough. And I felt that my peers' social media posts about the situation often mischaracterized what was going on. The environment has been a part of my identity since the third grade. That's when my best friend Liam informed me of something called global warming. It's a term he had heard from his mom, who watched a lot of documentaries. We learned that global warming is something that threatens the plants and animals we love. I remember marching around school in the park that year, chanting our slogan, "Save Mother Nature! Stop global warming!" We'd even send each other notes in class, just saying, "Save MN! Stop GW!" We thought of ourselves as environmentalists even back then. But the events of the past year made me question if there's any point in being an activist. I remember reading a book called The Giver in class, and I was shocked that the protagonist had never seen a bird. I feel that this is the world that we're headed towards if we keep pushing forward with initiatives like the Willow Project. They may never see the snowy egrets, black-chin hummingbirds, great herons, and the many different types of ducks my big sister and I did, first as summer campers, and then as guides at the Don Edwards Wildlife Refuge in Milpitas. The Willow Project news left me feeling frustrated, and most of all, powerless. I'm far from alone. A landmark survey conducted by the British medical journal The Lancet in 2021 found that more than half of the 10,000 people they interviewed between the ages of 16 and 25 said that they feel sad, anxious, and guilty about climate change. The Willow Project capped years worth of my own failed attempts to get my fellow high school students to be more environmentally conscious. I had worked so hard with my friends in our environmental club to design a system to convince our classmates to recycle their lunch containers. We even made a recycling PSA.
Always recycle, kids.
But how can I recycle?
Great question, Jimbo. Come with me.
Wait, my name's not Jimbo.
First, check if the item you want to recycle is on the list.
But nobody listened. Nobody recycled. And me and my friends would spend every Friday picking through soiled containers and sorting recyclables ourselves. Turns out, Only a tiny percentage of plastic even gets recycled.
Where is that recycling truck taking it?
What the Greenpeace report found is that even though it may first go to a recycling center on that truck, that most of it is just getting landfilled.
I can't help but look back at my senior year at Newark Memorial High School with a mixture of deep disappointment and despair. Was this why my fellow students didn't take action? This combination of my senior year experience, seeing an emissions-spewing corporation getting its way, and teenagers' often ill-informed social media posts all made me wonder whether anything I do as an individual can make a difference. And if we don't have any agency as individuals, are we just supposed to go on as if we're not in a climate crisis? I wanted to learn whether I was alone in my sense of doom. What were my peers' perspectives on their sense of agency? How do our emotions affect our ability to take effective action? And what can we do to manage our sometimes overwhelming emotions? Personally, I identify with those Gen Zers in the Lancet survey. Older and more powerful figures have all the control, and they're destroying the environment because they'll die before they see how harmful their actions are. Gen Z will be the ones forced to pick up the pieces when we had no say in the situation in the first place. Do my peers in the San Francisco Bay Area feel that everything they do is pointless as well? I started by meeting up with my best friend, Liam Sarmiento. Like me, he's a recent Newark Memorial High School graduate. We co-founded the Environmental Club and worked on the recycling project together with some other friends. I wanted to know whether the experience left him feeling as angry and as disappointed as I did. I tried to press him to admit that he was disappointed in his peers at their pathetic response to recycling. But he just kept saying that we might not have done the right kind of outreach. We hadn't put the right incentives in place.
You know what? Like, even after all these, like, obstacles. No, you know what? Not obstacles. Challenges. Thanks, AP Psych. I'm actually really optimistic for the future of the recycling program and NMHS.
What might you, like, do or say to, like, help peers who feel overwhelmed when it comes to the environment in this way? Or, like, have that climate fatigue?
What I would say to my peers with climate fatigue is that there is still hope.
Liam still believes in the power of collective action.
Be optimist and do good. Because if there are a lot of optimists, that means a lot of good.
Turns out, he's onto something. Researchers say that we need to acknowledge and manage our emotions. It's the most important first step to mobilizing people to actively engage in climate advocacy.
You see, the biggest obstacle to dealing with climate disruptions lies between your ears.
That's Per Espen Stoknes, a psychologist and economist. He is the author of What We Think Of When We Try Not to Think About Global Warming. The book's goal is to transform what's been called climate apocalypse fatigue and the resulting paralysis and denial into a belief in one's personal agency. Optimism is a crucial aspect of this. Humans react to the doom and gloom of catastrophic climate news and predictions in several ways that paralyze us, he says. Again, both Liam and I can relate. We actually made the very same point in our recent conversation.
You feel helpless because, like, then it just becomes a number, and then you're just like, oh, you don't really, like, want to do anything about it because, you know, that number's so big and it's really hard to, like, bring it down just by yourself.
Yeah, I think a lot of Gen Z feels kind of scared because when you look at the statistics, they're, like, literally the most ominous things ever. Oh, 2 billion trees died in this 1 hour. And you just feel like, oh, what am I supposed to do about that?
Espen Stoknes recommends that we focus on the everyday things in our lives that we can do collectively.
We can reframe climate as being really about human health. For instance, with plant-based, delicious burgers, good for you and good for the climate.
Cutting meat consumption by half would be the equivalent of taking 8 million cars off the road. the New York Times recently reported. That was good to hear. I've always been a vegetarian, and my friend Liam is a vegan. Liam and I could also relate to Espen Stoknes's observation that climate change predictions seem far off and detached from the realities of our daily lives. That's why we need to change that narrative, Espen Stoknes argues.
We can make climate feel near personal and urgent by bringing it home. If I believe my friends or neighbors, you guys, will do something, then I will too.
Espen Stoknes argues that policymakers should change the way we define problems and opportunities.
Psychology says, in order to create engagement, we should present, on balance, three positive or supportive framings for each climate threat we mention.
Both Liam and I did think about incentivizing fellow students to take action. For example, we had this free boba scheme. We bribed students to sort through the trash for recyclables for an hour on Fridays, with the promise of buying them a boba drink at the end of the year. But schemes like that didn't move the needle when it came to incentivizing enough people to take action. One climate activist I spoke to urges young people not to be discouraged.
We just don't spend enough time learning about social movements, how they work. You know, you might have a speech on Martin Luther King Day, but you don't understand about the organizing that went on.
That's Anya Kamenetz. She's a former NPR education reporter. She now advises the Climate Mental Health Network. It's a nonprofit that helps parents and teachers understand that emotions are an integral part of dealing with a climate crisis and gives them a way to talk to children about these emotions. Kamenetz's point is that the 13-month Montgomery bus boycott in 1955 eventually led to the Supreme Court ruling that segregation on public buses is unconstitutional. She herself is so worried about the state of affairs that she quit her prestigious job at NPR.
I was just so worried about the climate, and I couldn't file another story that had to do with not with climate change. I needed to be focusing on this full time.
Kamenetz blames our lack of mental health resources for our tendency to avoid conversations about climate change.
And so when people are paralyzed by anxiety, you know, most often they just wind up avoiding the subject altogether. I mean, why is it that Americans don't rank climate change number one among issues facing the country? It has to be because they are avoiding a reality.
We can make it easier to face the harsh reality by drawing on three different coping strategies. She points to the Swedish psychology professor Maria Ohala's research. It shows how young environmentalists can manage their emotions. We can deal with our emotions directly. We can express our feelings or self-soothe. This is emotion-focused coping. The next type is meaning-focused coping. This refers to someone drawing on their inner philosophy to change their perspective of the problem and view it in a healthier way. The third type is problem-focused coping.
Problem-focused coping is when we're taking action and we're acting hopefully with other people.
All this helps to channel our feelings into agency. That's an outlook my dumpster-diving vegan friend Liam shares. He also retains a sense of humor and optimism despite all the challenges we face. And he plans to keep going with his environmental activities through his lifestyle choices. For example, he wants to popularize the idea of wearing recycled snack wrappers.
For my Lay's bucket hats, yeah, because I'm eventually going to make it into a YouTube video. And then like a bunch of people are going to see it. They're going to be like, wow. Or it'll maybe be like a TikTok trend. And then everybody will start making stuff out of like these chip bags. And then it'll like become a DIY craft thing.
I have my doubts about his plans to become an influencer. But at least he's trying to do something and to inspire our peers to think about our lifestyle choices.
I don't feel helpless because if I get famous enough, then I can influence the minds of many. Okay, this sounds bad, but if I get powerful enough, then I could probably like influence a lot of things in a good direction, assuming that power doesn't corrupt me.
So your best bet to change things is just to like get really famous?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
To be honest, Liam's relentless sunniness sometimes makes me feel frustrated. I just want to wallow in my pessimistic little bubble. And sometimes I still do. The reality of the climate crisis reflects back to me in many aspects of my life, from the record high temperatures of the summer to headlines I read every day. It feels like a punch to the gut. It knocks me down for a few moments, and it still leaves me feeling hopeless. But it also makes me angry, and that anger fuels my environmentalism. I now realize that my pessimistic bubble only amplifies my anxiety. Just talking about these issues has made me feel better. And I hope this story makes you feel better too. But in fact, these recent conversations have rekindled a sense of hope. As I look forward to turning 18 in the fall, I plan to vote in both the local and national elections. One of the most encouraging points that Kamenetz made during her talk was that I'm not alone. This is how she suggested I frame the situation.
I have to look at all the people around the world that are collectively working and adapting to make the climate crisis better and understand that I'm just part of a giant wave.
So I plan to join college organizations that promote environmental action or help students connect with nature. For example, the Environmental Affairs Board or the Excursion Club at UCSB. Most importantly, I need to remind myself that the weight of the world isn't on my shoulders alone.
There's no possible way that this can be all my fault. And I have to do what I can do, and I have to let go what I can't let go of.
This fall, I will renew my efforts and address my emotions head on with my fellow students as we all explore difficult conversations around climate change.
Thanks for that story, Meher. That story came from Meher Indolia, a graduate of Newark Memorial High School who is now a freshman at UC Santa Barbara. I think what Meher said is key, that the weight of the world isn't on our shoulders alone. The recycling program Meher co-founded at her school is a great first step. And now I'm realizing that my decision to become a vegetarian several years ago is a valid and meaningful step I've taken to help the planet. In this next roundtable discussion, this season's TBH Teens talked about how we deal with climate fatigue and climate anxiety. Here's what we had to say.
Hi, my name is Carolina Quadros, and I'm going to be a freshman at UC Berkeley this fall.
My name is Miriam Reichenberg, and I'm going to be a junior at Berkeley High School.
I'm Annabelle Rabinowitz, and I'm going to be a senior at Stuart Hall.
My name is Jamarion Adro, and I am a recent graduate at Independence High School.
I don't know. I'm not really that overwhelmed. I feel like the issue with our generation is that, like, we're so focused on complaining and talking about climate change that we never actually do anything to help it. And also, I don't think it makes any sense to blame climate change on Gen Z or put the pressure on Gen Z, because so many, I think it's our government's fault.
I just think, like, the motivation has, like, decreased as time has gone on, because there's almost this, like, agreement within our generation that, like, it's just too late almost. Like, it's just, like, everyone's just so done with it, and we got placed with this problem, and we don't want to have to be the only ones to deal with it. And then I would put a lot more of the blame on the larger companies, the ones that manufacture with big factories, the ones that continue to pollute the world and pollute, like, the ocean, because it's better financially for them. And I think, like, the economic side of this is, like, a very big incentive for them to continue this.
You don't really need, like, a lot to make a change. I feel like at this point, anything counts in, like, the little things people do in their lives. Conserving energy, using public transportation, reducing waste and recycling, etc. I feel like just little things like that, and you incorporate them into your everyday lives can make change.
Well, doing the little things to help the environment, you know, recycling, transitioning to an electric car, eating less meat, and being aware of clothing waste may feel like they may not make a measurable difference in the world's carbon footprint. These are changes that we can easily make to help us hold on to our hope. You've been listening to TBH, a podcast from KALW Public Radio. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a minute to rate us on your podcast provider and leave a review. Next time on TBH, we'll hear about what it could take to bring more young people to the ballot box.
Okay, sure. I'll register to vote. So I did, and then the man who registered me handed me a ballot and was like, okay, you go vote over there. And I said, what?
Sarah Lai Sterling edited this show's feature from Meher Indolia. Sarah taught along with Holly J. McDeed, Lauren Tran Muchowski is our production assistant. Our artwork was created by Awan Mance. Gonady Joe Johnson, James Rollins, and Tarek Fuda are our engineers. Hanisha Harjani is our supervising editor. Ben Trefney is our executive director. This project was made possible with support from the Association for Continuing Education, the California Arts Council, and the Silicon Valley Community Foundation. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Miriam Reichenberg.